Thank you.
In the school that I was trained to be a rabbi, for over a century, the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, each rabbi, as he approached the last year of his training, had to deliver what is still called the senior sermon. Yes, that's how we felt about it too. Everyone was nervous. You got a date at the beginning of the year, and then you had all year to work on a sermon, and the reason you were nervous was you gave the sermon in the seminary's congregation, in its chapel, and your teachers were there, and the other students were there, and you didn't want to fail. At the beginning of the 20th century, or towards the middle of the 20th century, all the senior sermons were vetted, were gone over, were discussed by the famous Jewish philosopher, sociologist, and thinker, the founder of the Reconstructionist movement, Mordechai Kaplan. And Kaplan was well known for being ruthless with the students. If you came to him with a sermon that wasn't well thought out and wasn't logical and didn't follow point by point and didn't make sense, he'd tear you apart. One of Kaplan's most brilliant students was Rabbi Arthur Hertzberg. And Hertzberg used to tell the following story. He said when he came to Professor Kaplan with his sermon, Kaplan ripped it to shreds. And Hertzberg worked with Kaplan over the course of the year till his sermon was acceptable to the professor. And finally, a few weeks before Rabbi Hertzberg had to deliver his senior sermon, Kaplan passed on it and it was okay. That Shabbat, soon to be Rabbi Hertzberg got up and gave his sermon. And when he was done, Kaplan tore it to shreds. And Hertzberg was bewildered. He said, but Professor Kaplan, just a few weeks ago you told me it was all right. And Kaplan said, young man, since then I have grown. Now I want to put that in context. Why is it that someone like Kaplan felt so comfortable contradicting himself? Because, I want to suggest to you, that is actually a universal, not only of human beings, but of our tradition. We like to think that the tradition says one thing. And you will hear rabbis all the time say, this is what Judaism teaches you. And if you don't follow this, shame on you. But you know, on Sukkot, we read Kohelet, Ecclesiastes. And Kohelet is one of the books of Nach, one of the books of the Bible. And if you want to see a book contradict itself, read Kohelet. On the one hand, Kohelet says, it's better to go to a house of mourning than a house of feasting, and the day of your death is better than the day of your birth. Elsewhere in Kohelet, it says, better a live dog than a dead lion. So which is it? Is it better to be alive or dead? The answer is, it depends which verse in Kohelet you read. There are verses in Kohelet that say very uncomfortable things about women. One in 10,000 I have not found, says Kohelet, and when you find that one, it's never a woman. Apparently Kohelet had some bad experiences. But then in another part of Kohelet, he says, there's nothing better for you than to spend all the days of your life with a woman you love. So you want to say to him, okay, Kohelet, which is it? Good or bad? Kohelet goes on to say various other contradictions, goes on to offer various other contradictions, including, of course, the famous statement. There's a time to be born and a time to die. A time for laughter and a time for weeping. A time for love and a time for hate. A time for scattering stones and a time for gathering them together. In other words, life isn't simple. And anyone who makes it simple is doing violence to life and violence to human beings. As soon as you hear, this is the spiritual path, you know that you're listening to a Navi Sheker, a false prophet. There is no single truth, there is no single path, and every life is rife with contradictions. And if you ask, how can that possibly be? Isn't there one God? The answer is, things may be unitary for God, but not for us. In the Talmud, when Hillel and Shammai argue, what does the Talmud tell us? Does it say Hillel's right, Shammai's wrong? Or Shammai's right, Hillel's wrong? No. Zeh vazeh divrei Elohim chayim. This and that are the words of the living God. Now, how can they both be the words of the living God? They're arguing with each other, but the answer is, truth is not unitary. There is not one truth. There is not one political position. There is not one view on God. There is not one religion. There is not one path. That's hard to accept, because all of us want things to be the way we see it. And even though we are very willing to admit that other people can be wrong, and as we look throughout history, we see how many people were wrong in the past, we're convinced, though, that the person we listen to or the idea we have is right, and finally the search for truth is over. So if you read, for example, Jewish responsa, that is Jewish legal literature, you see rabbis are always saying that rabbis who went before them are wrong. All the time. But of course that means that some later rabbi might say they're wrong too. That we don't like to think about. But here's one of the most important reasons why we contradict each other all the time. Not that one is wrong and one is right, but that the reality of the world is that important values clash with each other. Isaiah Berlin, who was a philosopher and a writer, played an important part. He was the secretary to Chaim Weizmann before he became a scholar at Oxford, played an important part in the early days of the State of Israel. He spent his life teaching this lesson. Values may easily clash, he said, within the breast of a single individual, and it doesn't follow that if they do, some must be right and others wrong. Total liberty for wolves is death to the lambs. Liberty clashes with freedom. That is, someone else's freedom. Speech with offense. Kindness with truth. All these things don't only clash between people, but inside people as well. It's why Emerson said that a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. If you think there's only one way, it's because your vision is narrow, not because the truth is simple. The reason that we read Kohelet on Sukkot may have to do with the fragility of life, but also it has to do with this important lesson. After all, is there one way to build a sukkah? No, there are laws, but every sukkah looks different. Is there one way to make a person? No, the Mishnah tells us when a human king stamps coins, they all look alike. Every nickel you take out of your pocket is identical. But when the Melech Malchei Hamlachim, when the King of Kings stamps human faces, everyone is different. Now, if your face is different, then you have to imagine, so is what's inside of you. So is your soul. And no one else's path will be exactly right for you. So we learn from others, we gather their wisdom, but to subordinate your soul to someone else, to allow someone else to tell you exactly how it should be, is a violation of your own soul. There's a wonderful Hasidic story about two rabbis who grew up under the same great Rebbe, and one of them slavishly and exactly followed everything that his master had taught him. But the other one developed his own interpretations, his own ideas, did some things like his teacher, other things not. And when they met later in life, the careful disciple said to him, "I'm so disappointed with you. We had such a great teacher. He was such a wonderful man. Why haven't you followed his path?" And his friend said, "I did. I followed his path better than you. Because you see, he grew up and left his teacher, and I grew up and left mine." That's the way it's supposed to be. You don't have children so that they will be exactly like you. God wants his children to be different. Are there limits? Are there rules? Of course there are. I don't have to tell you that. But you should always protest against the voice that tells you this is the only way it must be. It was, after all, that theory on which America was founded. You can have a plurality of ways of realizing your life. I sometimes think that the only people who think that there's only one way to be are people who have never had children. Because as soon as you do, you see that there is no one way. And to treat all your children the same way is to be unfair to all of them, because every human being deserves his or her own specialness, the tending of his or her own flame. So, when someone tells you from a pulpit, from a newspaper, from a television screen, this is the way it is, you must follow this path, something inside you should rebel. Something inside you should know that no one is comprehensively wise. No one knows that much. No one is that smart, except, of course, for the one who created all this diversity. The Talmud says, when you see a crowd of people, Haro'eh Ochlosya Yisrael, just what I'm doing right now, there is a bracha you are supposed to say. Haro'eh Ochlosya Yisrael Omer Baruch Chacham Harazim, blessed be God who knows secrets. Why? Because when you see a crowd, everybody looks like a mass of people. You all look like one. You don't, I mean, but you get the idea. But God doesn't see you as a mass of people. God sees inside each one. God knows your secrets. God understands your heart. God does not expect you to be like the person next to you, or the person next to them, or exactly like your parents, or exactly like your children. Chacham HaRazim, each of us has secrets. Each of us has a soul. By ensuring that it finds its own path, you do honor to God. As the Kotzke Rebbe taught, if I spend my life trying to be like someone else, then who will be like me? Each of us has an obligation to God who gave us a unique soul, not to make it like everyone else. We are born originals. Let's not return our soul as copies. Baruch Chacham HaRazim, blessed be all of us with our special secrets and our special souls. Shabbat Shalom.